Yeah. This is... I had enthusiasm in my brain when I was about to start the intro, and I realized I had already... The tone, you know, the, I think the theme music puts... you know, host enthusiasm in my brain that sometimes it feels weird to put out that energy. Anyway, what's up? My name is Andrew T. Tani Newsom is here. You're listening to Yo, Is This Racist? Oh my God.
I am here. I'm on a mountain flavored internet delay. So this is gonna be fun.
we have a guest here, Nagin Farsad, who has been on the show before, but she's the host of Fake the Nation on our previous alma mater, Earwolf. But hi, what's up? How's it going, Nagin?
Oh my God, hi. Oh, lick, nothing's going on. Why would the three of us be stressed out right now? No particular reason.
Holy moly. I will say that when I looked at the calendar last week and realized that we had a guest this week, I was like, oh, that'll be... maybe kind of rough for a guest to talk about this insane week. And then when I saw that it was Nagin, I thought, oh, thank God, someone smart. Please, let's... Yeah. Andrew and I can put aside our usual yuck-em-ups and bullshits. By the way, did you all enjoy the watch-along of a Goofy movie we dropped last week?
Oh, God.
Instead of the racism podcast? What an insane... We are a parody of ourselves.
Yeah. And you're welcome. It was a true nightmare. Nagin, what happened was we thought we could take the first episode of the year off, so we just we'll ease into the new year, everyone's
yes.
So we just put in a jokey episode from the premium show, and good motherfucking God, is I can't think of worse timing. Although it was very us to just be like, who wants to watch a goofy movie. Literally, as the Confederate flag is flying within.
I mean, everyone wanted to be in your alternate reality, anyways. So you were just providing
that for the people. We were providing a long, meandering discussion on whether or not a goofy movie is a black movie. I said that it was. Yeah, the cliff notes of that are it is. Goofy is too reckless to be a father, and those talking dogs should not have jet black human toes. That's it. So if you didn't listen to the episode, that's the summation.
Yeah, and very reasonable. It's on us for daring to laugh. Good God. But yeah, I mean, I don't... So probably, I guess I'll just say up front, we just talked about this before we started rolling. You know... decent chance this is a non-typically structured episode. As we're recording, I guess nothing has happened as a result of, you know, close to nothing as a result of, I'll call them racists, white nationalists, white supremacists storming the Capitol building.
A couple of them got kicked off a plane.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun.
It's true. I guess that was funny. People getting kicked
Nagin,
off a plane.
You see that?
Yeah, the hashtag no fly list.
Yeah.
I know. You just don't expect you don't expect to be on the terrorism no fly list.
Red-blooded American?
Right. When you're just like a nice white American. The fun thing is, I just have to say, like, I have a name that belongs to somebody that's on a terrorism list or whatever. And it hasn't actually affected my flying, but it has affected my banking transactions. So I might be more of like a financial. I might have some sort of financial terrorist name, but if someone's like from a legitimate institution just trying to legitimately pay me for a job that I legitimately did, I oftentimes get I have to wait and it comes late, whatever. There's a whole thing where I have to prove who I am. I understand the inconvenience. Although I think the difference though is that I am not any kind of terrorist. So
yeah.
Sure,
you know.
Sure. Yeah. You didn't storm a government building armed.
I have to say one thing that I never really thought I had to say. I'm generally against sedition. Can we just clarify that for everybody who's listening? Sure. Like, I'm generally anti-sedition. I realize this about myself now.
Yeah, I didn't know that I was too. I guess I'm against like high key white sedition.
Ooh,
I am for whatever low key brown sedition this podcast is a small part of the fringe of.
Right, yeah. Sedition that maybe just involves like taking someone's Netflix password or something that's really sort of more on the cute level. Like,
yeah,
scams. Uh-huh. I can handle that.
Yeah,
but when it gets more intense than that, then I start getting real itchy. Yeah.
Wow. So your thumbs down on overthrowing the United States government.
I didn't mean to get too controversial just at the start of the show, but yes.
I mean, the wild thing is that does seem to be the current status quo is that this is up for debate. You know, let's not go too hard. Let's not go too hard on, you know, for instance, calling Nazis Nazis. I don't know. You know, you can only how many strikes does it before, you know, in terms of wearing Nazi paraphernalia as you murder people? I don't know. It's up for debate. It's up
and
for
you know,
debate.
I don't know if this is true, but it I've heard in different places that, and I think there's actually some discussion among historians of whether or not this is true, that it may have been the only time that the Confederate flag was flown at the Capitol was the day that was January 6th. So that's also another little fun potential fact.
That is a fun fact. Yeah. I look forward to seeing that in Trivial Pursuit decks in the future.
What a nightmare.
I mean, that feels like surely that must be the case, right? I guess it's not. I mean, that the flag has been so sanitized there. I mean, I guess there's a difference between flying, but surely some current American has brought the Confederate, you know, some depiction of the Confederate flag into the Capitol, you'd assume?
I mean, yeah.
At least on his boxers, you know?
Yeah, I would say, like, tucked away, maybe is like crotch stuffing.
Yeah. Or, you know, you feel like, you know, you look in Strom Thurmond's bottom drawer. There's no way that shit wasn't full of Confederate flags.
Oh, I saw that on the West End. Strom Thurmond's bottom drawer. It's transcendent.
I also love that he just had a drawer full of Confederate flags because you just never, just in case, you never know when you just like need
just
one in a hurry.
I'm just saying. I mean, so this might be, I spent most of the last, we'll say calendar, not calendar week, but the last, like, you know, emotional week, tweeting too much. But I started saying a bunch of shit that I'm like, this is like weird because I know it's technically wrong, but functionally correct about, you know, Republicans or so I guess maybe for me, because I just multiple times I was like, you know, it may not be technically true that every Republican is racist, but like, if you use that as your rule of thumb, you are never surprised. That's sort of like where I stood on things. And I realized I've obviously just been too far. I don't know. Is this wrong or am I just
Is it
wrong
to think that every Republican is racist? Is that the question?
Sort of, yeah.
I mean, it's funny because I have a column in the Progressive Magazine plug. But I just wrote, just to scoop myself in the next issue, I wrote a column about like how we need to be nice and I go back to being nice. And here's the thing, like, there was a time in American civil society that we were all like nice to each other. And was the niceness also hiding a lot of injustices, racial, gender, and socioeconomic injustice? Absolutely. But there was at least some measure of civility. And I think, and the thing is, it's in our living memory. Like 10 years ago, we were nice to conservatives and they were nice to us. The same people who we now like are not nice to, and conservatives are not nice to liberals. those same people were nice 10 years ago. So we actually know how to treat each other with civility. And I also think the way, just as people can change for the better, people can also change for the worse. So it's possible that we're seeing Republicans who weren't racist being like, you know, pulled in by racist ideology. One of the things I've sort of noticed about QAnon, one of the listener at Fake the Nation told me a story about how their mother-in-law got into QAnon, and it was through anti-pedophilia, because the mom had been a Catholic, and the mom left the Catholic Church. You know, she was disgusted by the, you know, the pedophilia scandals in the Catholic Church, and she, you know, she left and she had time on her hands, and she just sort of like didn't have an institution to put all of her energies in. And she was she heard about this anti-pedophilia movement, and she, you know, clicks on it, and it's QAnon, and so they get her on the anti-pedophilia, which, by the way, I just want to say, I am officially a part of all the of all the anti-pedophilia sentiments in the world, right? I am extremely anti. But I
we've got you on record. Anti-sedition, anti-pedophilia.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
But I think it's interesting when that's one of your issues and you're a lapsed Catholic and that was the thing that got you out of the church. I can see that being the thing that brings you in, and then it brings you in, and then it starts working on you with these different, now let's be anti-immigrant somehow for some reason that's related. Now let's be just generally bigoted somehow. We're going to rope you into that as well. And then I think it's sort of you know, it's sort of like you started watching The Real Housewives of Orange County, but then you got roped into The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and you don't even know how it happened, right? And so I think that's kind of the, you know, what we've seen from some people who were maybe otherwise reasonable. So the good news for me is that if they can be wooed to this kind of ideology, they can also be wooed out of it.
That's a great point. And I also, I totally agree with all of that, that it comes from, oftentimes people get wooed in because of these very noble causes. You know, they want to be anti this thing that is empirically bad, that no one would disagree with them on. And then where I, you know, get so sad, and where I think the thing breaks down, is that so many people don't, they lack the either life experience from, usually from being a person of color, to recognize the racist undertones to the other rhetoric that's interspersed in there, or they lack the like practiced critical thinking skills to point out racist rhetoric if they don't happen to be a person of color, that then they aren't able to sift through and go, oh, wait, this organization is very bad. They just had one cool thing that they got me in with. Okay, let me find something else. And that's where I just want everyone in America to have, like, I don't know, anti-racist training, like straight up training. Just, I guess that's called school. It should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, it should be in civics class, but that's because, we blow by that, and we blow by the civil rights movement in, like, you know, February, basically, and probably not all of that. I actually, though, without being like too much of a nitpicker and too ideologically blind to my already admittedly extremist position, I will just say a little bit that it does feel like if you're a lapsed Catholic and QAnon's version of fighting pedophilia is, you know, compelling to you, it feels to me like that is deflection. It's like, I was, you know, implicitly a supporter of an actual massive pedophilia ring, and these people are telling me it's someone else so that I can, you know, not be guilty, essentially. I can wipe my hands because turns out it was lizard people and Democrats. So I guess I would sort of argue it's still consistent. Like, I don't know if they were, you know, I don't, you know, that's maybe the cynical version of it. I don't know. Sorry,
but I mean, it obviously it ends up not being the only thing there. So, you know, you look at like the rates of suicide among non-college educated whites, that where suicide or deaths of, what is it called, despair, deaths like, of despair, despair is what they're calling it, where those numbers have gone up, right? Like that's not, you know, they're not lapsed Catholics or whatever, or like against pedophilia. Yeah. They're sad because the economy has left them in the lurch and because, you know, they're unhealthy. They're just not making any money. They have no prospects. I mean, there's just so many reasons. So in the same way that like ISIS was able to like pick up disaffected, male youths in the Middle East, you know, it's like these kinds of ideologies prey on people who are downtrodden, down on their luck. Again, I don't know enough about exactly, and we will know in the years to come how QAnon is able to pick people up, how other the right-wing organization, the Proud Boys or whatever, like what are this? I'm so curious about the sociological studies that are going to come out about these groups because I think we're going to learn a lot. It's just also about who gets to them first. Like it could have easily been Andrew or Tani getting to them first, and then they would and they would be into just completely different things. You know?
Come on to my cult, you guys. I'll get you all into all kinds of woodworking. I planted a desert garden the other day.
I mean, folks, I'm joining.
Come on, we are also anti-pedophilia. Amelia over here.
Nagit, I don't know how it is on Fake the Nation, but like definitely from the Twitter replies, there is sub single digit percentage, but it exists of like people I would just sort of call racists who are regular listeners to this show.
I mean, it's weird. You know. I mean, well, I guess it's the same as like, I don't know if you guys ever watch like Fox News or something like that.
Why would I do that to myself, Nagin?
I'm not built like that. I know people are, but
Nagin, you're too good. You're dedicated.
I can't. Honestly, I can't handle it for more than a few minutes at a time. I mean, the funny thing is, the rally preceding the invasion of the Capitol was being live streamed or whatever, and I just tuned in for maybe 3 minutes, and then I was like, okay, can't take it. And in those 3 minutes, he was just like, hope Mike Pence does the right thing. You know, we like Mike Pence unless he does the wrong thing, in which case, like, I don't know if we're going to like him or whatever he said. And I was just like, man, like, I don't want to feel sympathy for Mike Pence, but I do because I know this means a mob of people are like, you know, threatening him right now. Yeah. And then I went about my day. Like, I didn't realize that was going to turn into what it turned into. I can handle, I'm curious about what right-wing media and stuff like that is saying, and I can handle it for like 3 minutes, and then I get really just bored because it just, you know, I mean, they're making a lot of the same points over and over again, as we, you know, as the other side does as well. But, so I just kind of get boring. I just kind of get bored. But also, I just feel like it's not fun. I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to have more fun all the time. You know what I mean? So even when it comes to any kind of news, let's just have it be lighter and more fun. Jesus Christ. If you're driving in, you know, whenever I'm in California visiting my parents, like I'm listening to the radio a lot in the car, and there's just a lot of like right-wing talk radio. It is just, I also think that that's one of the things that we don't necessarily recognize is the draw of right-wing talk radio. And there's so much of it. There wasn't as much when I was growing up. I don't remember this at all growing up. I remember a lot of top 40 hit stations. That's not the scene.
Well, because music doesn't sell anymore. Like, music does not sell advertising. Right. You know, talk does and opinion does. And so that went away end of the 90s, I want to say. Like, I remember a sharp shift because I've always been – when I was younger, I loved the radio because Me even too. Though it wasn't, like, the hip indie music that I was getting when I would steal away to San Francisco and go to Amoeba Records and get all my like hipster shit.
Right.
It was like, this shit is popular for a reason. Like I loved learning what everyone liked. Like, what is the mainstream love? And so I really noticed that some of my favorite stations started going away in the Bay Area where I grew up. And yeah, just slowly things got replaced on terrestrial radio with talk. And it makes sense. It moves. It moves, I don't know what, vitamin packets, bars of soap, who knows.
And so can I make a recommendation for people who are looking for entertainment that has nothing to do with anything at all whatsoever?
Hell yeah.
When it comes to radio, if you're just looking for like a short reprieve from the national clusterfuck, I recommend Mod FM out of Palm Springs, California. I think it's 107.3, and you can probably get it on all the apps. And it's tunes from the 50s and 60s that have no negative emotional content. So it's only like the Frank Sinatra songs that were like happy, you know? And so sometimes when
hint at his dark side.
Yeah, exactly. No hints of anything dark from any artist at all. It's where you should go if you just need a break from the world.
And that is a tough thing. That's a tough thing to accomplish. So I tip my hat to Mod FM because a lot of those 50s doo-wop numbers are suddenly just about someone's girlfriend dying before the boyfriend learned she was pregnant. That's what most of them veer into. There's so many doo-wop songs that just get so creepily dark, but everyone's just like, ooh, ah.
Right.
Yeah.
The tone masks the pain.
Yeah.
The pain.
That was definitely from the era where it's like, hold up, what did the lyrics just say? It's like, doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's like, I married her and she was 12. Doo-wop. Yeah. What?
Well, this is for another podcast, but it was a holdover from the murder ballads, which came from the 1800s. But we can talk about that on my other podcast, Why Music Has Always Been Fucked Up and About Domestic Violence. Look for it on Suboptimal Pods. I probably really will do it now.
It's a really zingy title. I think you're going to do great.
Thank you. It's good. It's really optimized for, it's good for SEO and ads and stuff. So, wait, we don't have to stop talking about the idiots at the Capitol and how I'm glad we have some distance from it now, because it was really horrifying to watch or even know about. And then I don't know. The fact that we can laugh about it now, I'm hoping is comforting to some people. Not that it was funny, but just that we're all kind of like, the absurdity of it is a little easier to swallow right now. So hopefully that's helpful for some listeners. But I do want to talk about the big wins that we had in Georgia, since we have Nagin especially.
Oh, yeah.
Nagin, I like your tweet. I would have voted for John Ossoff simply based on his billboard that said, vote your Ossoff. I can't resist a good pun. I did not see that billboard. And
was
I'm really
that not
that
the best billboard tagline? Vote your ass off. Amazing. Again, when you want to go, I'd rather be around people that have a sense of humor. And John Ossoff is one of them. And Raphael Warnock is also another one of them. He had a great series of ads where he was like throwing poop bags. He was walking his little dog. And he's like, oh, the other side wants to call me a radical socialist or something. But that's a bunch of, and he would like throw a poop bag away or something. And and it was cute. It was just like, it's fun. I mean, it's okay for us to have a sense of humor about American politics. It's okay. But yeah, that's so exciting. And I actually was recording Fake the Nation when we couldn't quite say that Ossoff had won. But you know, but then hours later they declared it, and that was great. And I was still a little scared, as I kept saying it was like that we have a shmishmority of the shmenit, because I couldn't say the actual words. I thought it would jinx it, like my mouth alone jinx the Senate. But I think the interesting thing to come out of that race is that, you know, Loeffler and Perdue kind of wasted not very much time in conceding the races. I mean, Perdue didn't call Ossoff the way you're supposed to or whatever, but he did publicly sort of concede. Loeffler conceded. She called Warnock, and she then said something kind of nice. I mean, she played the role of a politician, in the way that we wish everybody would, the role of just like a nice person. And so I thought that was one of the immediate effects of the insurrection, was that Perdue and Loeffler were like, okay, let's not drag this out with ridiculous recounts, and let's kind of be civil about this and immediately recognize that the other side has won. And so we have a majority of the Senate with Kamala Harris as a tie-breaking vote, and that's really amazing. And there's some like very kind of pragmatic things that we could do very quickly with that. And that, like getting more COVID relief. Like if people were excited by the idea of a $2,000 check, hey, you might be getting a $2,000 check. If you were excited by the idea of like not having to fire teachers and fire police officers and shut down fire departments because there was not enough city and local aid, that is going to actually happen because the Biden administration is committed to actually helping people, and we have enough votes to do that kind of legislation.
It's so funny that genuinely, gun to my head, I would have said that was 5 years ago when that happened. It's so wild. That is like, as you were talking, I was realizing, I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience because I was like, oh my God, that was the same fucking day. That was the same fucking day. Did you manage to have any, like, I think I felt like okay for like an hour on Wednesday. You know, I was like, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time to, like, unpack and like, yeah, that is a thing that is good, you know.
I felt a little good on Wednesday. There was a funny tweet that friend of the show, Paul F. Tompkins, he tweeted a screenshot of Warnock on The View. And it's
oh, like, yes,
they're all like on Zoom screens, you know. I don't know how they're doing The View if they're all at their homes or whatever.
Yeah, they're like
so
on
like,
Zoom,
So it's like six blocks, and it's like Whoopi, and then Warnoff's top middle, and then Joy, and then bottom left is a woman. I'm sorry, I don't know her name. Anyway, everyone is smiling except for Meghan McCain, and it's just this very intense, small child's frown on her face, and it is. And Paul's tweet just says, "I am sorry to report that this photo is objectively funny," and it just it made me think of Nagin when you were talking about just having a little fun with American politics. Like, the sour lady is mad about the nice man winning, and that's okay to laugh at.
Right. It's so sad that we didn't get to have like a full. Rejoicing on the streets, you know, like we didn't get our celebration was immediately sucked away. But I think we'll really get to celebrate once we see some actual management and, you know, from the federal government, an actual vaccine rollout that makes sense, like all of that. I think we are poised to see that stuff now. And so, you know, obviously everyone's on pins and needles for the next 10 days, but it's gonna happen. Sorry, you were gonna say happen. Tanya, I cut you off.
Oh no, it's fine. I was just gonna say that you're right, we didn't get to quite have the celebratory moment. There was a little bit of it on Twitter, and then of course it quickly got weird with everyone's like weird black people worship of Stacey Abrams. Like it quickly just turned uncomfortable, but it was still celebratory.
Wait, yeah, Tani, can you talk about that? I have some thoughts that I'm not even know if I'm allowed to have, but like, what is your opinion of the worship of Stacey Abrams?
My opinion, this is like, these two things are not the same at all, and me even equivocating them is a little gross and stupid, but this is how my brain works. And so just know, everyone know that this example is gross and stupid. I get it. But the idea that Stacey Abrams did something besides just work very hard and be very good at her job and surround herself with people who worked very hard and were very good at their jobs, the idea that there's some magic or some voodoo or, I mean, I saw all kinds of crazy coded weird language about her being a supernatural being, as opposed to just a hard worker who's good at her job. And like so the example that I want to make, which I shouldn't, but it's like when... It is like when some new to LA, somebody's cousin who wants to be an actor, wants to sit me down and pick my brain about how to get into the business. And I say things like, you go to 1 million auditions.
Right, that's
the answer. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. It's not some, I didn't know, I'm not someone's niece. There's not a secret pill. I'm not special. I worked really hard. You know, talent is, who knows where that even comes into play in this stupid town. But truly it is just like, I just did this a lot for a long time and I'm older than you think I am. Like, that's, and so I just feel like everyone's celebration of her was really, you know, lovely to a point. And then I'm just like, man, you really just can't stand that.
Yeah.
This woman, this black woman, that maybe that black women in general are just very fucking good at putting their nose to the grindstone and getting the work done. And I think that's because, as a, you know, societally, racially, we have been coded, black people have been coded as lazy purposefully. We've been coded as, you know, not being able to hold on to jobs or not being reliable or not being on time or being slower. All these things that have come from the fact that we built this country, we started it with our labor, with our literal hard work. And so to constantly remember that we are a hardworking people, you have to think about how the country was built. You got to think back to where our hard work started for us here. Right. And like, it's just too uncomfortable. So it's easier to be like, oh yeah, black people are on welfare. Black people are, or the opposite, which is black people are magic. Black women are everything.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we're just fucking hardworking people.
Right,
I've been scrolling through my Twitter likes to try to find this, but the tweet, I'm sorry I can't give attribution because I can't find it, but I assume this went viral is how I saw it, is basically to the white liberals, try to talk about Stacey Abrams in a way that doesn't make you sound like the dad from Get Out. It was just like, it was so gross, and it was
Yeah, it's so, like, it's what's weirdly, so the thing that sort of makes me feel uncomfortable is, and I don't, and not even necessarily, and I think this is something that we see kind of across the board with women of color who have like sort of made a dent in American political life. So I'm looking at AOC in addition to, and I'm looking at Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib. These women are sort of like being singled out and put in a star status. A lot of other people are being ignored who are also really hardworking. And so it's kind of creating unnecessary fissures within among progressives who are all working really hard. And so, you know, one of the things that I said on Fake the Nation, I tweeted and I tweeted out, like, there's a Stacey Abrams in every state. Who's yours? Because let's, this isn't about Stacey Abrams saves America, right? Like, she did an incredible job doing what she did. And there's a lot of people that worked with her. And it's weird to me that a lot of those people will not get recognition because she's getting so much. And, you know, and unfortunately, the Stacey Abrams in Texas might actually be Beto O'Rourke, who is a tall white guy, you know? And so, but that's also okay. You know what I mean? It's okay. They are actually, it's like, I like white people. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with that.
Ring the bell. We got one for the episode.
We have to say it every episode. For the entire pod.
We have to say, someone on the pod has to say it every episode or else we get kicked off all the major platforms.
It's like an FCC rule. But you know, I'm a woman of color. Like, I'm an Iranian American Muslim. I mean, I think part of it for me too is that I'm from such a specifically a small ethnic minority, like just a ridiculously specific one. And there's like five of us, and so nobody's like, Iranian women, they get shit done. Like, nobody has any, like, you know what I mean? We don't have any things. Like, someone might be like, ask that girl, she has some saffron. Like, that might be the only like thing that people might think of. But so part of me is just like, you know, there's a coalition of people that make these things happen, and and it's, you know, and it ends up being weird, right? And a lot of people do end up sounding like the dad from Get Out when they sort of fixate on an aspect of, you know, and I'd rather talk about Stacey Abrams' electoral strategy than mm-hmm. anything mm-hmm. else about her. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. So
yeah. That's true, too, because there's a lot of, like, discussing, especially for women and women of color, discussing strategy and plan of attack and logistics and their kind of the intelligence that a particular woman might have around that. It never happens. It's always like, well, she worked her magic, or wow, she really pulled mm-hmm. some strings. It's always like a trick or magic or something, as opposed to being right. like, this was math. She did something right. very left brain, something that we normally attribute to men. Yeah,
she
really
had PowerPoints.
That, so.
She went yeah. around with PowerPoint nerd. Presentations. And there's a lot of like mm-hmm. Halo memes of her, or like Halo memes of AOC and stuff. Oh, and you're yeah. like, that's weird yeah. to me, guys. Yeah. They're actually learned individuals.
There's a
right,
tweet.
Right, right.
There's a tweet that says, that's a picture of Stacey Abrams, and it says, gonna tell my kids this was Captain America. And I'm just... like
yeah.
it should literally be an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah, right, I'm gonna tell my kids this was Captain America.
Because that's how people's brains work. They need yeah, like a hero yeah. because they can't fathom that it simply takes work to do this.
Well, it is God, the that, sort oh. of MCUization, if you will,
yeah.
of American political life, if we have to treat them that way.
And I wish, this is where I just have to plug the time when Paul F. Tompkins and I got to interview Stacey Abrams on.
By the way, PFT
our...
making a big appearance on today's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
well, I do a whole other podcast with him, so.
And no, also, you know what? We just have to prove there's one good white man, at least, that we know of.
But he and I got to interview her on
Maybe
our.
Maybe it's you, Paul.
Official Star Trek podcast, and she's a huge Star Trek fan, and she takes a lot of her
oh, that's right.
political strategy from like some of the great captains that she admired. And so again, yeah, just like this idea of hard work and I don't know, I just wish people were less weird about their I guess mm-hmm. I wish, if anything, if you're gonna superheroify her, put her in the Star Trek universe, because that's some shit that she actually likes and has talked about, rather than just some left field ass make her a
right,
you know,
right, right,
a super creature person.
Though, you know, mm-hmm. it's funny, among like Iranian Muslim boomer doctors and a foreword is going around about the guy who's, I guess, helmed the Pfizer effort to make the vaccine, Turkish immigrant, who there's a picture of him from when he was like 9 years old, like with his family, which is, you know, it's just sort of like the picture we all know of an immigrant family, you know? and it could be my family's picture, you know, it's just like that. It's like an iconic immigrant family photo in like an unassuming living room where people are almost smiling but not really, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And it's like that thing of you know, this is the kid that made the vaccine, and so just in terms of like visuals also matter, like what Stacey Abrams is, you know, the signifier era. And I, you know, again, I do hope we get away from like the magical Stacey Abrams, but into like the mm-hmm. strategic game theorist Stacey Abrams. You know, it is also, I think, great for us to see those memes, which my dad forwarded me, the one of the Pfizer kid. And because they are something that we're not kind of accustomed to and we don't give enough credit to. And that kid did, you know, he was allowed to grow up and do this amazing thing, against all odds. Sure. And that's mm-hmm. also, you know, it's incredible to see that. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I yeah. understand the memification of her at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even mind the memification. I want her memed like y'all meme Steve Jobs.
Right.
Like, talk
yes,
about
yes,
her
yes,
like
yes,
you
yes.
talk about mm-hmm. some white dude intellectual, because that's what yeah. she is. She's yes. an intellectual and yes. she's a politician. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way maybe you talk about it. Not the specific words, not the, you know, the deification is like,
this is going to happen.
Clearly. Like, sure. Yeah. That's how people's brains work clearly these days. So,
yeah.
huh. Man, wow, we managed to do a show that was not as fucking grim as I really like in my head was like, well, this is what it is.
That's the Nagin touch, man. She gave us knowledge. Truly. She gave us a bubbly energy.
You know, look, guys, we had a team. The main merch for Fake the Nation for all of the fall of 2020 was we're only doing optimism. I just shut it down. I can't be. I don't want to live in the darkness anymore. Like, things do get better because they have to, and I'm, you know, so let's be excited about it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. That's actually really once again, I'm going to call an audible back to a thing we used to do, which is, and putting you on the spot a little bit, Nagin.
Sure.
What is there a thing that has been helping your optimism in this particularly this last fucking week, or is there something you've done that's been like helpful to you or uplifting in general or uplifting to other people?
Yeah. I mean, I get this question a lot. And I turned off notifications on my phone, like at some point, I think in June. So I don't find out when big things happen in the world. I don't find out unless I find out intentionally. Like, I log on. I make my news consumption very intentional, and I try and make it like at discrete times of the day. And I just try not to like look at news when I don't need to. And this is someone who has a news and politics based podcast. That's been really, really helpful. Also, like, my husband makes me name two things I'm grateful for every day before we go to sleep. I know it's super dorky, but I find that helpful. Also, and then here's the most fun thing I like to do. I like to belt songs at the top of my lungs in the privacy in my own home where nobody can hear me. I really love to just sing along. And singing along, you know, it gets you breathing. It gets all of the, you know, your kind of... and breathing which is a big part of meditation. So I just find singing more fun than meditating. So anyways, those are some of the things I do. I highly recommend all of them.
Holy shit.
I like that a lot. I like your husband's tactic. I fear that I would have hurt him if I was married to him this year, because this year was a little intense. So if every day of 2020 I had to say two things I was grateful for, he would be injured and it would be sad. But it's very sweet, and I like.
Some days when one of us is feeling lazy, it's always like the baby, the dog, good night. You know?
Yeah.
You can have lazy days, but it's nice to remember that you still have the baby, you know, the two things that you're good, you know, the garden, the sun, you know what I mean? The whatever.
Yes.
That truly, honestly, I'm going to probably try to incorporate that. That's amazing and fucking great. Holy shit. I'm also glad that having put you on the spot, that you're well practiced in this thing.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't too much on the spot. She's put on the spot every night before she goes to sleep.
You were fucking locked and loaded. Nagin, can you tell people how they can see, hear, find more of
you,
your writing, etc.?
Folks, I hope that you follow me on Twitter and Instagram and breaking news, I'm on TikTok. Follow me at Nagin Farsad on all the socials, a name that is both easy to pronounce and spell. And you can also subscribe to Fake the Nation. We've had Andrew on. We're going to have Tani on if she'll allow it.
I will allow it.
And we've had Paul F. Tompkins on, and we've had Margaret Cho and Samantha Bee and Julian Castro. I mean, we've just had a bevy of amazing hosts, guests. So it'd be great if you subscribe to the podcast.
Yeah, everybody, check it out. Especially as we enter, this is a good time. Maybe if you were a little burnout on absorbing politics because they were so batshit terrifying. Mm-hmm. I have a hunch after January 20th, while no, not everything's going to be fixed like some magic pill, but I have a hunch things will become a little more tolerable to hear about.
Yes.
So this would be a good time to, if you were taking a self-care break from the insanity of the last 4 or 5 years, maybe now's a good time to check back in.
J'agree.
Yeah.
J'agree.
Fingers crossed. I guess I'm too pessimistic, but I will leave all that shit for show.
It's not like those people are going anywhere, but you know, at least the people at the top, at least the speeches being made from that lectern in the White House will just have a cooler temperature. You're welcome, Andrew, you fucking maniac. He has a problem.
Literally, by far, my worst thing, don't at me with what my actual worst thing is, but the lectern thing is so high on my list of pet peeves. It's it's terrible. Anyway, Nikki, thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks for talking to us, and be well, of course.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad to have been one of your first conversations of the new year.
I am so glad that you were. You got to come back soon.
Anytime.
We can be found I'm at Trondi Newman on all the things. He's at Andrew T. But don't at us about racism. You can at us about nice things. If you want to talk about racism, you can at Yo, Is This Racist? And you can call in 323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. And if you want to subscribe to our premium show, we have Yo, Can We Live, which comes out every Friday, where we just talk about people of color winning, zero racism involved. It's a palate cleanser for the soul.
Yep.
That and then a bunch of other weird grab bag shit that Andrew and I make and record, limited series pods, all kinds of weird shit, is on our very own independent subscription site. That's at suboptimalpods.com. Check it out.
And if I can reiterate, I got one DM this week that was very depressing. That is not a joke. Someone was like, oh, I thought you guys were joking about the premium show and the suboptimal pods. That is not a joke. If you would like to support us, please actually go there. Thank you.
Why would that be a joke?
I don't know.
Why would it be
a
joke?
I was just like smashing my head against the thing. I was like, oh my God, we have created something just bonkers. Anyway, thanks again.
We're in comedy. We know how to make jokes. That's not one. Now I'm mad.
just straight lunacy. Okay. Peace, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.